My name is Melissa Petro, and my book is called Shame on You: How to Be a Woman in the Age of Mortification.
In 2010, public school teacher Melissa Petro found herself as the cover story of a New York Post article outing her as a former sex worker. She reflects on her experience with shame and the unique ways women experience different forms of shame in her book, Shame on You: How to Be a Woman in the Age of Mortification. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Melissa Petro. So you cover a lot of topics in this book, and we'll only be able to touch on a few of them during this interview. Maybe you can start by giving our listeners a brief description of the book.
Sure. Well, the project really started out as a memoir. It was really important to me for most of my adult life, actually, to tell my story. You know, it started out as a story about a woman's experiences in the sex trades when I was in my 20s. I started at 19 and I started writing in my 20s. Then, you know, I had a somewhat unique experience. At age 30, I was outed by the New York Post as a former sex worker, then turned public school teacher. And the New York Post decided that was news, put me on their cover, and there was just a, you know, headlines after that. And what I now understand, it was an experience of mass media humiliation. And that was their intent, to create entertainment at my expense. And obviously that became part of my story. You know, the great lengths I went to leave sex work and become a public school teacher, only for this to happen, and then how I overcame that. And I worked really hard to try to sell a memoir for a really long time. But gratefully, I met my agent, Laura Mazur, and she pretty quickly told me she didn't represent memoir. But if I wanted to write a book about something else, she would support me. And it took about 2 years of handholding. She was really present the whole time, witnessing my meaning making of that experience. And we all know that good books aren't just a situation, it's a story. And I'm kind of cribbing off Vivian Gornick's book, The Situation and the Story. You know, so what? I often at times ask my students now that I teach creative writing. Interesting story, but like, so what? What do we all have to learn as a result of your experience? What's the take-home message? And it took me so long, so long. And I know, I'm sure Laura at some point suggested very early on, you know, maybe, I don't know, is this a story about shame? It really, I couldn't put my finger on it. And that's actually what shame is. It's such an elusive, pernicious emotion. It's so painful and terrifying that we don't want to name it. We don't want to realize and admit and make ourselves so vulnerable as to acknowledge its presence. And yet there it was. Even when I knew better intellectually, and I knew I was right, I knew what was happening to me was wrong. I knew there was nothing wrong with the choices I made in my 20s. I had made them for important reasons due to circumstances beyond my control. And obviously, the New York Post, they were wrong, not me. And yet the whole world, it seemed, disagreed with that. And that's really that fundamental feeling of difference and flawedness and the feeling of just being inferior, wrong, and not belonging. That's the feeling of shame. But I want to say also, there was a period where the memoir became about mothering. When I had my two young children, when I first became a mom. And that's when I really understood what women were up against, because not only had I had this experience as a woman with experiences in the sex trades, and then having experienced mass media humiliation, those were very unique experience, but the experience of mothering and the shame that came with that was so ubiquitous and so unavoidable. Now here I was doing everything right, and I was still experiencing judgment, criticism, surveillance. I felt constantly surveyed and yet utterly invisible all the time. Nothing I did was correct. I couldn't be good enough, even now. And so that really also contributed to this thesis that became ultimately the book that that my agent Laura and I ended up selling to Michelle Howery at Putnam Books. Shame on You was one Putnam offered the title, but the idea that women were made to feel less than and constantly criticized, and that that feeling, that natural emotion was being weaponized against us to keep us from achieving our goals and knowing our worth, that it wasn't about me or my particular story, because we all have particular stories. And then we all have these constant experiences all day long that just chip away at our sense of self and our power, ultimately, that keep us from being our best selves.
I want to touch on motherhood and female shame in a moment, but you mentioned the New York Post. They exposed you to this public humiliation, and you've also, you've said the term shame. And one idea you explore is the difference between guilt, humiliation, and shame. Can you talk to me about these differences?
Sure. So I think embarrassment also is another similar feeling. It's sort of something we recognize as this universal experience that makes us feel a little vulnerable, but generally we can laugh at it. Shame is so much greater than that. It's a feeling of wrongness and uniqueness in a way that embarrassment isn't. And guilt is also a feeling of wrongness, but it's a feeling that we've done something wrong, whereas shame is the feeling that we are wrong. The difference is important because if you've done something wrong, you can change your behavior. But if you are something wrong, you're hopeless. And the best you can do is pretend. So oftentimes when we feel ashamed, we avoid that feeling and just pretend that we don't feel ashamed, or that we overcompensate in all these ways, or we just try to be better, try to do better. But in our minds, there's that feeling that we can't escape, because ultimately we're not better, the voice whispers. So that's really the difference between guilt and shame. And it's really important, because then you can shift something that you're ashamed of into feeling guilty and take action. The difference between humiliation and shame is really interesting and important too. And that's not something I really understood until I started working on this book, because I felt ashamed. I did, after the New York Post humiliated me. I felt that I could have done something differently, that I could have done anything at any point to avoid what they had done to me. And ultimately, in researching this book and to recognize the difference between a feeling of shame and a feeling of humiliation, it's that power and control. Obviously, we want to feel in control of our lives and our experiences. And that's one reason we blame ourselves as victims. I was not responsible for what happened to me. I was a victim of humiliation. They humiliated me. They tried to make me feel small, and it worked. But I was not responsible for their actions in any way. That's the difference between shame and humiliation. When I understand that what is being done to me, that my dehumanization is undeserved, then I can recognize it as a humiliation and I can rise above it.
You explain that shame is not exclusively a women's phenomenon. Talk to me about how women's shame might differ from men's.
So our world really rests on the backs of women. We are carrying so much invisible labor that our entire economy relies on. How do they manipulate women like you and I into following these rules and behaving in ways that accommodate the world? Well, that's the tool of shame, right? If I'm not a good enough mother, if I don't take on the responsibilities, all the unpaid labor, all of the caretaking and management of the home, so that presumably my husband, and this isn't how it works in my home, but this is how it's supposed to work, right? I'm supposed to be the laborer, the nurturer. I'm supposed to take care of everything so that someone else can go out and work and contribute to public life. Where does that leave us? And why do we sign on to that? Well, look at what happens to women who don't. Look at what happens to women when we don't follow the rules, when we don't behave and participate in the role as it's been assigned to us. We're punished. We're childless cat ladies. We're whores, or we're just bad mothers. And these are all equally undesirable. Even if you know better, again, even if we know that it is wrong to degrade and dehumanize women in these ways, we can't help but feel that feeling of unbelonging. And it's a really painful feeling that we try to avoid.
Can you talk about the importance of female friendship?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I have a quote by the poet Kate Bear, and she talks about what friends mean in her life. And when she found her husband, gosh, I related so much to this. She said, you know, he's great. He's like, whatever, best friend, cliche. She didn't say that. But our marriage would be nothing if I didn't have a million other people to turn to. Read the quote because it's so much more eloquent than what I'm how I'm expressing it. But I related so hard because we're taught that this like man is going to fulfill us completely. He's the one, right? But he's one of so many people that I turn to in my life today. And those relationships sustain me. They literally keep me alive because they're people I can turn to when I am feeling disconnected. And that's what shame does. It disconnects us. It makes us feel fundamentally different, and it gives us a feeling of unbelonging and an existential alienation that we do not belong and therefore won't be taken care of. So it's a real threat. Whereas when we find people that we can attune to, really connect, they see us, they hear us, and they understand us. Then we feel embodied safety, like our whole nervous system relaxes and we can go on. It's so interesting because promoting a book, and I'm an expert on this topic, and I am, and I'm certainly an expert on my experience, but like, man, the struggle is real. And I still, first of all, I will never be like shame resistant. I still find myself admitting in moments throughout my day to my humiliation that I'm experiencing shame, that shame has gotten the best of me, and that I have to, you know, reset and make amends if necessary and all those things. But my body is still oftentimes in crisis, and my friends are the people that remind me of my humanness and my worth. So no matter the problem, I can feel seen. And that feeling of connection keeps me alive.
The book compiles interviews that you've conducted along with the published work of other researchers and authors. What was your research and writing process like?
This book really started as a cry for help in my 20s when I was just trying to make sense of myself and my experience. And through that journey, I'm in my 40s now, I came upon a lot of messages in bottles, in books, online, eventually, that were my salvation. They were little clues towards a better, more wholehearted life. And I clung to them. And those are throughout the book. These are literally the books I discovered, or the passages, or the small bits of information that helped me feel less alone in my shame and feel less shamed, less ashamed. So those materials are throughout the book. I didn't write this book in 9 months, which is, you know, contract to first draft. I wrote this book in like 25 years, 25 years of reading and seeking because I was desperate. And then at the end, obviously, a lot of it is research, updated research, and you know, more current books that I've discovered more recently. The book is really a cataloging of all of the texts that help me make meaning of myself and my experience, and really understand my experience through this lens of shame resilience, which I had experienced, but I didn't have the language for.
I guess this is probably a question about the publishing process, but I actually listened while I read the physical copy, and you narrated the audiobook. What was that process like?
Oh gosh, that was so nerve-wracking. This whole thing is nerve-wracking because you have an idea of what it feels like, and then you have this experience. And I mean, that's really, where a lot of complicated feelings can arise, right? When there's that gap. But I felt like wholly unprepared. And it was the first time I was reading the book through because it was a, in my brain, it was a very rushed process. I did, even though I had 20 plus years with drafts upon drafts, this book was written in 9 months. And I was editing it until the very end. Like my editor, Michelle, was like, pencils down, Melissa. I was trying to make edits to versions you were not meant to be editing. I was still like fussing over sentences. So I didn't know what even had lived in the version or not. I didn't read the draft until I was sitting there reading the draft into a microphone. I didn't know how the sentence that I began would end. So I wasn't able to, well, listen, I wasn't able to do it perfectly. It was also a traumatic story. Like I'm reading this like really emotional experience, and it's on top of that, an emotional experience to be producing the audiobook. So it was just like layers and layers of weirdness. And I felt, I don't know, just this is the word. I felt, as I feel throughout this entire process, I felt so vulnerable. What do? You just be in that place. So I didn't get to practice and feel more in command. And I didn't get to feel more in command and control as I would want to feel. Instead, I got to feel really messy and imperfect. And I have no idea what the draft sounds like. I cringe at the thought.
So your hypothesis is that shame is broken by communication. Do you think a world without shame, or maybe specifically women's shame, is possible?
I don't believe there's a world without shame because it's one of those natural emotions, like anything else, like joy or boredom or anger. There is shame. You are going to feel shame. What we could have is a world that does not weaponize shame against women and other people who do not conform to a certain standard. That is possible. That's not the world we live in today. We live in a culture where people are constantly shaming each other as ways of making themselves feel better or to escape their own fear of inadequacy. We're pointing at other people and laughing as a way of kind of feeling a little bit safer because the fingers aren't pointed at us. I get it. I participate in this culture too. I click on the comments and hate read just like everyone else. And I know how it makes me feel. And it doesn't make me feel good. Not like I feel when I connect authentically with people, when I put myself in front of an audience and allow myself to be seen. And when I see someone else in their own vulnerability and recognize the strength in that, it's such a more wholehearted way to live. It's not the way we live. We are fearful and surviving in this culture. I do think we could do it differently. And I do think people are starting to do it differently. I think we're starting to, as a culture, become more resilient to toxic sexist shame in particular. We see the attacks against Kamala Harris and how they just sort of bounced off her and the audience in general, that we were all just sort of able to recognize the toxicity, and we were able to turn it around really quickly and allow it to empower us. And I think that's the next generation. We kind of grew up online. We're so used to it. We have such a cultural awareness, and we're just tired of it. It's no longer going to exhaust us. It's going to energize us. And we're going to rise up, not even in spite of it, but because of it.
Do you have a hope for readers of this book? What do you want them to take away from it?
I hope that people recognize themselves in the experiences that they read And maybe they'll find the exact experience. Like, oh, I can't believe here's an interview with someone who has the exact same thing that I'm ashamed of. You know, that one thing we kind of keep in our heart that we're afraid people will find out about. Here's somebody on the page is talking about how they have that thing and how they're dealing with it. Maybe you'll find that in the book. And maybe you won't find that exact experience, but you'll recognize the feeling. And so you might even find an experience that's completely different, maybe even an experience that you've judged that you can look at differently now because you can relate to that feeling that I share. And obviously, I'm hoping that people who have no experiences in the sex trades, but maybe an opinion about it can come to the book and maybe their opinion will become softened. Whatever that opinion, maybe they'll understand the experience differently as a result of reading my story, and they'll recognize individuals with those experiences in a more human way.
Well, the book is Shame on You: How to Be a Woman in the Age of Mortification. Melissa Petro, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Melissa Petro, author of the book Shame on You: How to Be a Woman in the Age of Mortification, which was published by Putnam. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Books and Whatnot is a podcast for readers, where we talk about the titles we've read lately and those bookish little discoveries along the way.
You know what, Beth? I have just realized what my favorite new genre is. And my favorite new genre is WTF.
It is.
Listen to Books and Whatnot every month from KMUW, part of the NPR Podcast Network.